It's going.
We want to establish quorum.
Arnold Furtick.
Douglas Ward.
Tom Weller.
Linda Johnston.
William Barth.
Jeff Barney.
Russ Smith.
Okay. Jim, would you like to lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Has everyone had a chance to go through the meeting minutes?
Yep. I have a correction to make.
Okay.
On page 4, top line, where it says Chair Ward, and third line down, Chair Ward again. You should scratch out the chair, because the chair's over here, not me.
Got it.
No big deal.
Any other corrections?
I move that we accept them with the corrections.
No second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Done deal. All right, on to item 5. Just rock and rolling.
Okay, but basically the meeting today, as we talked about last time, mm-hmm. and Tom might skip that meeting, but we were going to spend today basically, or not, that is the only thing on the agenda. There is someone here for a public comment at the end, but on DEQ sewer water and all of those kinds of things. So this is our chance. That's why we did it informal around the table, more of a work session atmosphere. Mm-hmm. So this is to get down into the and talk and learn and ask the questions. We talked about it last month that the DEQ had called us and we went down and met with them, Scott and I and Deborah and some other folks from their office to start looking into this whole, you know, Kegel, some basically unsewered parts of the city to the north, Glenwood and some of the other folks out there. And you know, I think that they wanted, but felt it was time to start kind of engaging in it, looking, taking, you know, and it's true, we knew that. We just kind of let it sit there. The districts had been working on it, as you know, and then when we were coming along, then that all stopped. And now it's a year and a half later, or nearly 2 years later, so it's probably time to start re-energizing, because this stuff takes a long time. So the first place what we should do is you hear from Bob and Eric from DEQ, and I'll let them introduce themselves in a minute, that, you know, and they'll kind of give a presentation on this, the whole South County septic sewer thing. And we're going to try to, one of the things I talked to them on the phone yesterday is they're going to kind of, because you have to understand that base. You know, I would hope that we don't spend three quarters of our time on the conspiracy theories or all of the issues over mm-hmm. South County septic right. sewer nitrates. I know that's going to be tough, but if because otherwise you never get to the topic. Mm-hmm. But it's okay to ask some questions. Mm-hmm. I mean, they worked hard at this, and there was a citizens committee. But this is, you know, moving on from that. And they've been 3 or 4 years spent on that process, and so and I think it does make sense to obviously move forward on it. We have a sewer system; it's right on Burgess, you know, so it's not too big of a stretch. Now there's all kinds of issues with it, expense and politics and all kinds of things. So with that, I think we'll go ahead and let them start. But I thought one thing maybe we could go around and, because I think it helps them to know where you all live, because I did tell them they're not all city residents, because they would sit here and assume you all live in the city already on the sewer. They don't know that. So if you would just say that if you're on a septic and just where you live, and that might then give them an idea of who they're talking to. So I'm Rick, and I'm the interim city manager.
I'm Scott Perkins, public works manager, and I'm not on the city's water or sewer.
Where
city.
You live? What's your septic?
Yeah, on my own standard system.
I'm Russ Smith. I live in Kegel. We aren't on septic or water.
Jim Fleming. I live off of Maston, and I have the nitrix system. Came out. Have that.
Wayne Barth, Huntington and Evergreen. I'm septic with the standard system.
Linda Johnson and I live inside the city and take advantage of the water and sewer, city water and sewer.
Tom Weller, I live outside the city and I have a standard septic system.
Douglas Ward, I also live in Kegel in the northwest corner, and I have a sand filter system and a well water.
I'm Arnold Furtig. I live just south of State Rack Road on Twin Drive. I'm outside the city, standard septic and well water.
And why don't we go ahead and just so people know we're all here, so we get it.
Yeah, I'm Ken Willicks, the mayor. I live in Glenwood Acres, and I have the German
Biogreasel
sewer treatment plant residential, and I'm on a public, actually a water system. It's a community water system under the state.
Mm-hmm. I'm Michael Carrier. I'm just interested in what's going on in the city. I live outside the city limits, and I'm on a septic system.
Stu Martinez. I live within the city. I'm on the city water and sewer, but also have a well for irrigation and manage a garbage company, which is in the industrial part. That is connected to the water and sewer in the city.
Okay, guys.
I'm Eric Nigg. I live up by Terrebonne, and I'm on a septic and my own well.
And I'm Bob Baggett, and I live in Bend, in the north end of town, and I have water and sewer from the city of Bend.
So, full disclosure,
yeah.
I am a septic. So, we've actually had conversations with the city on this topic a number of times. Well, before it was a city, in fact, you know, a number of times over when there was a district. And I think, you know, just to bring you folks up to speed with what we've been doing, I won't dwell on this too long. I think there's been enough conversation, enough, you know, discussion in the papers. People know what's going on and things like that. But Bob and I, particularly, for about 4 years now, have been down here a lot, working actively with a steering committee of people who were selected from around this area, people both within the city and outside the city, up as far as Sun River, and people with varying types of waste treatment, and that is kind of what it comes down to. But the purpose of our sitting a committee to talk about groundwater in this area was that we are convinced that groundwater is at risk from the disposal of wastewater in this area. Not in the city of Lapine, but outside, where we have very dense lots, things that were platted before modern land use planning rules, and because there's shallow groundwater, the area can't really take all the wastewater that's just discharged at the treatment level that it's discharged in this area. And so we brought together a citizen committee to study this issue and make recommendations to the Department of Environmental Quality. Now, I'm sorry, I didn't really introduce myself entirely, or Bob. I'm Eric Nigg. I'm the water quality manager for the Department of Environmental Quality. That's the state, and we work out of Bend. And Bob?
I'm a natural resource specialist. I've worked in the on-site wastewater program now for 31, 32 years. I did 16 years in Klamath County, and I've been at DEQ for 18 years. And I've actually been engaged in the groundwater issues here in the Lapine area now since when I was in Klamath around 93 is when I first got involved. So.
Yeah. And so Bob really is the certifiable expert here on wastewater disposal and septic systems and things like that. But you all know that, you know, the county took a run at trying to find a solution to this that, you know, did not work and did not go over well. And so we took a different turn at it, and we wanted to get people who actually live in the area to make recommendations to us. And again, they studied the problem, they studied the issue of groundwater contamination, and I think it's fair to say the committee in the end was convinced that there is something to protect and there is a source of pollutant that we want to keep out of the groundwater over the long term. And so they gave us 9 recommendations, and principal among those recommendations was being able to provide better wastewater treatment throughout the area. Because of land use planning rules, areas outside of Lapine, the rural residential areas, can't extend sewers to them. They can't even combine sewage treatment between 2 homes or 5 homes or 10 homes. And so one of their chief recommendations was that we get an exception to that rule so that cluster systems could form, maybe a neighborhood of 25 or 100 homes or something like that could work together and build some kind of a treatment system that they would be collectively paying for, maintaining, and so forth. And those kinds of things typically would be under permit to our department. So we would have some assurance that maintenance was going on, that they were actually operating as intended, and so forth. And they also suggested that there be some kind of a local governance for wastewater treatment, whether that was a sanitary authority for the entire area that was not already within, for instance, a sewer district or within the city limits or something like that, but outside that area, that there would be some, you know, local government governance with local control that would manage all of that and try and encourage the development of wastewater treatment systems and ultimately get the best quality, the highest level of treatment that we possibly can in the area and protect groundwater as best we can. In this area, the vast majority of people rely on individual wells for their drinking water, and those are generally pretty shallow wells. And so that's, you know, the immediate thing that we're trying to protect is people's drinking water. But, you know, as an agency, we're concerned about groundwater for environmental conditions as well. There's probably an equal argument for trying to get a drinking water system to all of these places outside, as the city has done, and just, you know, cut to the chase and provide safe drinking water for all the people in the area. But, you know, that was kind of outside our steering committee thought that was outside the scope of what they were trying to decide. So I think those are the two big things. And one of the things that everybody accepted that was that where you have a wastewater treatment plant, that is the highest and best treatment available. That's the best that we can do to treat the water before its disposal and protect groundwater and protect everybody's drinking water and so forth. So what the sort of the easy thing is that where you have a sewer, it should be serving as many people as it can. And so we know that within the city of Lapine, there are a couple of outlier areas that have not been provided sewer. We believe that the system does have the capacity to provide that sewage treatment and disposal. And I know that there are plans for changes with the wastewater treatment plant and the disposal system and things like that. But there isn't anything on that end of it, on the capacity end, that would preclude providing sewer to these areas. So as I said, we've talked about this before, you know, before Lapine was a city and before Lapine, the city of Lapine, owned and managed the wastewater treatment plant. And I believe that it has generally been the intention that the city ultimately would treat and provide treatment to the Cagle area, and I think Glenwood, but particularly Cagle, I know we've talked about. It's a large enough area. I think it's on the order of 200 residences, 250 residences, something like that. So that's a large enough area that it's significant in terms of groundwater loading, you know, loading of pollutants into the groundwater. And the reason this is as important to us as it is, I think, is one, it is one of those things that seems like it's very, very fixable. You know, there is already a lot of the infrastructure in place to do this. And Lapine is the best example we have locally of the possible impacts of these on-site systems on shallow groundwater and the effects on drinking water. And so, you know, back in the late 70s, there were well samples, and the majority of drinking water wells in this town were polluted. Most of those were above the drinking water standard for nitrate. That indicates that not only is there nitrate in your water, but there's also other things in sewage that have not been treated away that are water soluble, that travel the same as nitrate is. So you have other pollutants in there. We keep track of nitrogen or nitrate because it's easy and it gives us a good indication. There is also a drinking water standard for it, but there are other things that we know are going to be in that drinking water if nitrate is there. So there were wells in this town that had drinking water that was nitrate concentrations on the order of 40 plus milligrams per liter. That's four times the drinking water standard. And with the construction and extension of construction of the wastewater treatment plant and extension of sewer to the city through the system that you've got, those have diminished. We have monitoring wells around the spray fields, the disposal area, and we can see the steady decline in nitrate in the groundwater that, you know, essentially moves from the city of Lapine past that area. So we know that it worked, and we know it's cleaning it up, and we know that it is vulnerable. All those things were evident in the city of Lapine, and it was fixed. And so we're not here because anyone's done anything wrong. We do believe that in the past it was the intention, and it was part of the plan, for instance, to sewer Kegel. And we kind of like to talk to the city again about that and see what the plan is and where it's going. I had a discussion recently with a consultant that called me and was talking to me about the city's facilities plan. And so my recollection is that facilities plan did envision sewering Kegel, for instance, that had already become part of that. So part of the discussion was, well, it's going to cost a whole bunch of money to update that plan so that it reflects, you know, what the city is going to do. And so it's not really my job to tell you to do this or anything like that, but we would like to know what the plan is, what kind of a timeline the city thinks it may be on, and so forth. Do you have anything to add?
I mean, there's a couple things. Of course, there's folks that are on individual on-site systems in the area of Kegel, and from time to time, you know, one of those will fail, and so we're kind of challenged about, well, what do? You know, we need to protect groundwater. And our way of doing that right now is to put in a nitrogen-reducing system, which, of course, is going to cost more than a standard system. And then you got the issue, well, you know, the area of Kegel really should be served by the city, yet now we're asking a property owner to spend this extra money to put in a nitrogen-reducing system. And so that kind of creates some issues there and everything. The groundwater beneath Kegel is in fact contaminated. The very shallow groundwater, these contaminants head to the groundwater. They get in the groundwater and they remain in the upper level of the groundwater. That's where they concentrate. But then everybody's got a well, and when a well kicks on and starts pulling water out of the aquifer, you get a cone of depression, and that mixes these contaminants further within the water column. And I've looked at well logs in the Kegel area, and there's a mix match. There's some that really don't have any clays or silts in their well logs, and there's some that do. And what that tells you is that it's not a continuous layer of clay or silt. It's intermixed. And so, again, the water table is being contaminated, and it's being mixed, and it's going to be throughout the whole aquifer. So even if you're getting your water below a clay layer, that clay layer doesn't extend for miles in every direction. It's kind of localized. And your water beneath the clay is still at risk of contamination. And you know, we've got a public water supply that's down gradient from Kegel. That's the Riverview Trailer Park. And they have high levels of nitrate in their drinking water. And in fact, they're having to do treatment for nitrates there at that public water supply.
If they're west of Cagle.
Yeah, they're kind
across
of west.
Across Huntington.
Yeah, so they're between Cagle and the river.
Right.
And so that's probably the direction of the plume coming from the Cagle subdivision is.
See, this is what is interesting, at least to me, is to know these different levels of water and how you're coming up with this. And when mm-hmm. you were talking about the water being contaminated, you were talking within the core where some of the original businesses were and the mm-hmm. restaurants and things mm-hmm. like that. Okay.
Yeah, and that historical contamination was very dense, you know, very concentrated within this area.
Which our water and sewer has taken care of.
Yes, okay. for the city itself. Now, this is a little island of
right.
where there's a plume going down into that groundwater and being carried off to someone else. And so, you know, that is the issue. We are seeing increases in nitrate over time in wells in the general area outside of the city of Lapine. And so we believe that we're looking at, while a slower a slower progression, we think we're looking at the same thing. And it is our job to try and get out in front of that and find a way to keep it from being contaminated so that water doesn't provide the use that it's intended for. So.
I think
that's it. I mean, we really,
Scott, could say, you know, when I was here before, we had calls of that. Occasionally, you do get calls before you were even in the city. You can call me in your silver district. You get those calls from people having a failure.
Yeah, we do. And there's a group of people that have property in Cagle that would like to develop it and would like to develop it without a nitrate reducing system. So they have, there is, and of course, for every person that wants sewer in there, there's probably some that don't.
Yeah.
Or two, but I think it's really the direction that the city needs to head or that anybody needs to head.
And one of the things we are talking about, I think, is some certainty as well. So we don't want to require somebody to put in an expensive system when some short number of years, hopefully down the line, sewer is going to be available and they'll be part of the entire system. Then that's just a waste of money twice in a way. And so we would prefer to avoid that. And I think if we had some certainty in where the city was going, then, you know, we might, you know, be able to respond differently.
Sure, yeah, we could get into an agreement and understanding that if somebody's system fails, then we would do a minimal type of a repair to hold them over until the sewer came through and they
right.
connect to it.
Right.
What do you classify a shallow well as opposed to a deep well? You were talking about shallow water areas. What is shallow in DEQ's mind?
Well, I think we see wells around here, and Bob, I'll lean on you more, but we see wells that are less than 50 feet deep commonly in this area, and so that's a shallow
true.
Well. We see them, you know, deeper than that, but throughout the area, the average is I would say, shallow on the order of 50 to 100 feet.
And, you know, the deeper you go, the more likely you will encounter a finer texture layer of soil, such as a silt or a And so, sure, if your well is deeper, as you go deeper, the risk diminishes. It doesn't,
correct.
But it doesn't disappear.
I understand.
And so, but then at the same time, if you've got people that have deeper wells, but their septic systems are still discharging into the water table,
uh-huh.
if they're downstream, or, you know, downgrading users that have shallow wells, then they're at greater risk.
Well, the reason I was asking is that we have, in the area I live in, there's a couple people I know that have wells of from 42 to 50 feet, but
mm-hmm.
most of us are in the neighborhood of 75 to 125 feet, with one exception, and he's 410.
Right.
But he's kind of has an artesian well. He's got a catheter, it overflows out of his casing about
mm-hmm.
4 or 5 inches.
Yeah, right. He's probably tapped into at least what we call third water. In other words, you've got a non-confined, you've got an aquifer that's non-confined,
mm-hmm.
and then you'll have a second layer, second water, between two impervious layers, and then you can have a third that can also be through between
okay.
two impervious layers, yet that impervious layer also can have some hydrostatic, some pressure.
Correct.
Because the the entry at the water table is up at a higher elevation.
Correct.
So it comes down to pressure. So that's an artesian type well.
We had, in my place, we had a shallow well to begin with, and it was a great tasting water. Mm-hmm. But during a drought, we run out of water. So we went down to 72 feet. And once you hit that aquifer, the water came up within about 10 feet of the surface. Mm-hmm. And we just had the water tested, and they couldn't find anything in it. Nothing. Mm-hmm. They couldn't measure the nitrites, E. coli, lead. There was no trace of anything. We do have a little iron.
Yeah, you get the iron and manganese at that level.
Yeah. That'd be it. There was nothing else in the water. Yeah. And it comes out at about 40 degrees, and it's great. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so you obviously, yeah, you're into a more...
Well, we're into a layer, clay about 10 to 15 feet thick. Mm-hmm. So there was nothing going through that, of course.
Sure. But then your septic system is...
We have that nitrate system, and when they measured the water at the end, there's no trace of anything.
So you said you've got the Nitrex.
Nitrex, yeah.
Yeah.
That's that 4-stage.
Okay, yeah, okay, I know which one. It's not the sand filter with the outflow filter, it's the nitrate.
Well, we have a tank, and then it goes into a sand filter, but they said it was some kind of special rock. Goes through wood,
yeah,
into another tank, out to the leach field, and when it gets out to the leach field, there's no trace of it in it.
So that is the best performer, yeah, we had in the Lapine project.
Yeah.
Unfortunately,
it's the most expensive.
It's the most expensive, and the manufacturer is... you've got one of three in the state, basically.
You're special, Jim.
Yeah. Of course I am.
We already knew that.
Don't forget that.
Right. I'll bring that up.
Yeah, don't forget that.
Yeah, don't.
Jim's always been special. He rides a short bus.
So I guess, you know, what I think it's a discussion you need to have, and ultimately give some advice, a couple of councilmen are here, is, you know, is something, you know, this is not going to be an easy lift. It's a several year deal. It'll, most of you won't be on this committee probably when the spigot's turned on, and most of the elected officials here today won't be in office. I mean, yeah, this is a long term deal. But it's one of those things that if you don't ever start, it will never happen. You know, voluntarily, you're not going to get 51, 55, 60% of the people coming in and saying, please do this. That's not going to happen. So it's one where the city has to decide, and that's why you have citizen advisory committees. Is this, you know, something you just are going to have to, you know, bite, and you move forward, and you just start working on it. And at the end of the day, just like someone did that in the current system you're talking about, you know, people were paying nothing. And then now they pay, and they pay monthly, and you know, do they want to? No, but they do. And it's now it's just part of their daily thing, and it's not even thought about. So I think that's the direction I know is from staff, and then ultimately the council, because, I mean, they're going to have to raise their hand at some point and say, let's move officially, formally, let's start out. We don't know numbers, we don't know anything, but before we're going to spend our money and staff time and go for some loans and grants and technical assistance and everything, we kind of got to know that. I mean, I got to turn around, is there anyone behind me? Is this just me moving forward with these guys who run back to their state office?
We drive.
You know, just to give you an anecdote, I think I told you last month, right, a lady told me that she called about, didn't want to live down here because she thought the nitrate and the water issue. But I was on the North Fork of the John Day this last week, and Ben Fireman's wife and I were sitting there, and she knew I was city manager here, and she's a nurse, and she says, hey, so have they fixed all those water, that bad water issue in Lapine? And, you know, so I think it does affect our economy, actually.
Oh, it does.
There's an image issue, and you can say whether it's perceived, real, but there's enough, as you said, that it's been there in the past. There are, in fact, it was polluted, mm-hmm, and it doesn't meet standards. And if you've got a trailer park that's treating their water, because it doesn't meet, you know, you can argue all day long, maybe your water's perfect, but the perception, reality is, and I think it does affect, why in Central Oregon, when everyone else has pure drinking water, do you want to locate your family, your business? I mean, it is one of those issues. It's not the only one by any means, but it's one of those issues.
So you know how you build somebody up and then you... So your system does a real good job of treating for nitrates, but there's other stuff that you're putting down the drain that it's not treating for.
Right.
That's getting into the ground more, so...
He was special.
Almost 15 minutes.
Well, like I said, they did test the outgoing, and the main concern was the nitrates, and it was not.
Mm-hmm. It was below 10.
It's doing its job for what it was designed to do.
Exactly.
And we have not had any problem with it, none. I am mandatory to have it inspected every year. And the report has to go to Salem. They said I'm on my own district, or whatever you want to call it, my own sanitary system. So all that has to go to Salem. It costs about $250 a year. That's it. And they clean everything out, adjust everything if it needs to, and all the reports are sent in. Yeah. That's it.
So on that point about the perception, you know, and we know that's there, and we've worked pretty hard to try and not inflame that. You know, there's a range of things that the state can do between DEQ, for instance, and the Oregon Health Authority when there are, you know, real problems with drinking water. And, you know, what we are trying to do is never get to the point where we have to do something really drastic. And I think it's also fair to say to you that, you know, we've, over the last few years, I think, come to the conclusion that while this is a growing problem, it's growing slow enough that we think we can get out ahead of it as the community can. I mean, not just Lapine, but everybody that lives down here, you know, we are working with people. We can get out in front of it and keep it from getting to the point where there is something that is really stamped on the area.
Right.
And so that has been a major concern of ours when we've been going through this is to try and keep it in the right perspective. You know, we can't control what the bulletin writes, but we try and keep it in that appropriate perspective. So.
How do you see the how would you like to see the progression of this go in kind of a timely manner? How should we line this up?
In terms of Kegel and
right,
let's
just
sewer.
Just
in the city in general, mm-hmm. and I think so. The city has a facilities plan. That's how you're going to manage and expand your facilities through time. And I think you're in the process of updating that, but I'm not sure. We've been finding out whether it's already up to.
No updates, but Anderson Perry is looking at.
Well, this is the direction where I talk. Anderson Perry is a consultant that is working. He did our water lines. We got all mapped, and they're doing some work for us. So he had to talk to you, probably.
Yes, he did.
Yeah, the owner of the firm, one of the owners.
Yeah.
And so he was here. We were discussing this. And so yeah, there is when the districts they have master plans done. Mm-hmm. So you know it's the same general area. So it'd be pretty not too expensive to update.
Right.
You know you have to kind of new population growth. And costs have gone up.
New name on the cover.
New name on the cover is that stuff. But you know the subdivision is the same size. And just as a clarification, I know some of you will say, well, there's only 150 houses. It really goes by lots. You have to assume that every lot could have a house. So whether there's 100 living there today, and some are part-time, some are full-time, it's X amount of lots. And that's what we're talking about.
Right. So to answer your question, what we would like to see is that, you know, the facilities plan reflects what the city really intends to do, mm-hmm. and that we have some kind of a timeline idea for, you know, when these outlying areas would be served. And, you know, based on that, then I think we can respond, for instance, when there's a need for a repair or something like that, we can have an appropriate response. Now, if it's, well, we're not going to do anything for 20 years, then we may be concerned about that and require a more elaborate system of treatment. But if it's, you know, we're on sort of the five-year plan or something like that, then I think personally that it's entirely appropriate for us to have an agreement with the city that we would not require advanced treatment technology systems for repairs, you know, given that we expect that the whole thing's going to be solved.
I also think that, you know, there's got to be work towards getting as much funding for the project. there would probably be possibly survey of demographics in the area. All that plays into what kind of monies you can get to offset the cost to each property owner. And
that may be in the facility plan, but it may be a little dated because it's probably 5 years older, something like that.
I mean, Scott? It would have
2006, I believe. Is
okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
There's been a census since then.
Yeah.
But those are kind of small things. It's important.
They're small things to change
in a way. But DEQ is also a source of certain kinds of funding, and we coordinate with the Oregon Biz, who also has infrastructure grants and loans. And we have very low interest loan program, our state revolving fund loan program. And it is very low interest. It's largely for infrastructure projects like this. And the part we manage is almost all either wastewater, stormwater, or something like that. So.
Then there's USDA, I think.
Mm-hmm. Rural development. So anyway, we don't need to talk about money right now, but if it were all free, this would be done. We wouldn't be talking about it. But we can provide some assistance that way.
So do you have a list of where grants can be applied for?
Not with me, but we can get it to you, and I can. And if that's the will of this group, I can have my state revolving fund loan project officer give you a call and start talking you through.
We're gonna have to have some help. I think really for us, it's that's all part of what's gonna go on.
Right.
It's that leaping off that's where we're headed. I think at this point, if you really want to get up high, it's gonna cost $5 or $6 million, $7 million. We know that from the other plan. Things haven't changed that much. It's the same number of lots. We spend all of our time and money redoing plans, and then we never built anything since the other plan's been done. We do this with ODOT all the time. So if you just can accept that in 2006, that subdivision's boundary are exactly the same, mm-hmm. has the same number of lots, it doesn't matter if two more houses were built.
Right.
So, yes, is our wages higher or lower, is pipe higher or lower, but just assume that it's that. Currently people are spending $20-$30 a month. It's going to cost some money. There's going to be install. That's, to me, I think, to get to where we're ready to say, no, we're moving down that path. And yes, people will pay to hook up. And we don't know those numbers yet because you can't. But it does cost. And we do know you're going to pay a monthly fee, something above $25 or $30 a month. It's safe to say that. And you're going to throw in water, too, because when you do this, you're going to do both. That's a question. Because it would be really hard to probably do one, and you're digging up the streets twice and all that. But then that's another $20, $30 a month or $40 a month. And so, we're saying that people are going to start spending $50 to $100 a month, because this could be 5 years from now. That's what we're saying. So I don't think we need to spend. That's why I've been. The other thing is, and I told these guys when we met, the district right now, if there's 200 possible lots out there, it's a huge increase in our current system. Well, when we go out and spend 20 or 30 grand updating for Kegel again, who pays for that? The current sewer water users.
Mm-hmm.
And how many fault starts do we want? In other words, unless we're moving forward, there is no point in spending more money studying it to refine it further.
Exactly.
Because otherwise, we're just telling him. In fact, in the room, there are how many on sewer and water? Two. These two are paying, once again, to talk about a whole bunch of other people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the problem. Now, in a bigger city, I was in Matters, and we took on the south end of Matters. It was like a 5 or 10%. When you go up and take on Morrison's Trailer Park, which you remember well.
I tried to block that out.
Another 8 years.
That's a city with several thousand people, and they took on 50 traders. And so it's all that matter of spreading it. So if for us, if we start spending the money out of our sewer fund we have now, and we aren't sure we're moving forward or where this is going, then pretty soon I got to go add $5 more a month to you. And that's why I've been reluctant. If we shove off, we're shoving off.
Yep.
And therefore, at the end of this road, there'll be sewer and water out there. And it may be $100 a month.
Just
that's kind of my where I've been.
A couple of points I'd like to bring up. Number one is I've read two different engineering things that we had come out. One was 300 lots out there in Cagle, the other is 350. It's someplace in that realm. My major concern is right now all those lots, or most of those lots, are 1 acre lots. There are two lots that are 10 or higher acreage. If we get sewer water out there, people are going, what? Well, we can now do high density building out there. Mm-hmm. We're no longer talking 300 lots. We're now talking about
four times
that number if the city allows them to build that way.
But then
and you have some people out there who are definitely going to try it.
Then you're coming back to city planning, though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I mean, that's...
No, that's a legitimate...
We have to take that into consideration now and say, are we going to build for this size four times what we need? Because we're going to expand the future in a very consolidated way. Or are we going to turn around and say, no, you aren't going to expand?
I think in this, one of the things,
part of
planning is tied into this.
Well, one thing I want to make real clear about this part of the discussion, you know, we mentioned the recommendation from the steering committee, and one of those recommendations was to look at an exception to Goal 11, which prevents the extension of sewers outside of cities and districts and things like that. In that process, they will not be able to upzone or increase development density. I'm talking about
outside
the city.
It has nothing to do with your plan.
I just wanted to point out that there's an apple and there's an orange here. I don't want anybody getting the idea that if we get a Goal 11 exception, that all the lots throughout this whole area.
But I think legitimately that means that any lots that can be subdivided, there'll be a lot of interest in that. You know.
Now see, what we would do is, but we would, at the same time, if this was, because what he's saying is exactly what's going to come up.
Mm-hmm.
And so then you simply, it's all part of the process. You know, it's like, you know, two or three things happen at once. But you would make sure that maybe it's a 1 acre minimum, you know, you could have, because right now it is that, it's our comp plan's been approved at those densities. Mm-hmm. So again, it may already be taken care of in our comp plan. But
we've got to make sure of that before we go ahead, because otherwise we could get really smacked in the side of that.
Right. So if that was taken care of to where it stays at that number of lots.
That's very significant. I mean, that's, then all we have to worry about is the 55-gallon drums out there and other such things. We all know our out there problem.
Well, part of the system. I mean, we would build out the system.
Yeah.
So that we're, I mean, all those things can be fixed.
And so, he's right. That's your job, you know, to think about those things and the planning for this city. And we don't engage in that planning part. If it is going to be four times as dense, we expect that the sewage treatment plant will be able to, we expect that it'll be planned so that, you know, it's all taken care of. You know, we don't. The city will do, planning-wise, what the city will do. That's not really our job, but the wastewater treatment and disposal, we're very concerned about. So.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right. You're right. I mean, that's what people do. You know, it's almost
we've
like a vacuum.
We've already heard too many rumors of that. You know, people have, I can guarantee you, people have lots out there right now. They're just waiting for the sewers to come in so they can start splitting.
I think that's one thing that we really need to stay on top of, and is getting the right information out to the residents. These rumors start and it just snowballs. You've had people that have been living here for 30 years that want nothing to do with that. They love their sewers, they love the clean well water they're getting, and this is such an encroachment on their property and their wallet and the rest of that, that I think that we need to have some clear means of sending out the right messages of what we're looking at, what don't even have to get into the cost, but just, you know, what effect that's going to have on the city, the effect it's going to have on the city residents. I know the little pocket that I'm in that the city doesn't recognize. Six houses, and there's a different rumor going on in each one.
You know, where's your pocket?
Evergreen and Huntington.
Just south of
it's over by me.
Yeah.
Yeah. The opposite side of Huntington.
We're not on the same street as the mayor because he gets his street plowed and we don't. he gets his mosquitoes sprayed and we don't. He gets all the other city services and
we're on the wrong side of the street.
We don't even have tracks close by, so it's no matter of being on the wrong side of the tracks.
You're over by Mike Shields.
Yeah, south, yeah. South of him.
South.
Yeah, south of Mike Shields.
There are a lot of trees and stuff between Mike Shields and
that private road.
But it's the same area.
Yep.
Yeah. Oh yeah, that's an interesting area.
I have a question. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I've asked this question before, but I've never asked it of you. Mm-hmm. Everybody that lives in Cable knows that sewer water is coming. They've known it for 10 years because it was part of the incorporation plan. And they're all scared to death of it because they don't understand it. What happens, and by the way, we took a survey 5 years ago with the old sewer plant by mail, and 78% of the people who live in Cable said, no, we do not want sewer, we do not want water. Now, what happens if a property owner says, no, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to let you come on my property. I'm not going to put in sewer. I'm not going to put in the water. Go away. What happens and whose responsibility is it to solve it? The state's or the city's?
Well, I'm not sure, but I believe it's the city. It would be like code enforcement.
But what do you do now, I guess, when those kind of things
What
happen,
do?
I guess, if you have someone just thumbs their nose.
Well, first of all, I have never had that come to me. To
if the septic system were to fail and they weren't connected to the sewer, but the sewer was both physically and legally available, they would have to connect because we would not allow them to repair their septic system.
And we
do deal with people that don't want to do what we ask them to do, and it's called enforcement, and we do have that.
We should describe our relationship here a little bit, because we have a direct relationship with the City of Lapine for operation of their wastewater treatment plant, construction and operation. They have a permit with us that allows them to construct and operate, okay? And we keep track of monitoring and all that kind of stuff. So we have that relationship. The city has a relationship with all the people in their service area, and the city, if it is an ordinance that you will connect to sewer when it's available, and most cities have that kind of an ordinance when it gets to within so many feet of your property, for instance, that's one example, then you must connect to the sewer. Then that's an enforcement issue for the city and the people it provides service to. If then they're on a septic and that septic fails, then they would go to the county or us for a permit to repair that system or install a new one. And if, as Bob said, it's within 300 feet, mm-hmm. then we would not issue that permit. It's illegal for us to issue that permit. So we have two separate relationships.
So within 300 feet, they have to hook up?
300 feet of the property.
Well, we could not issue a permit. Okay.
They can't legally repair their septic system.
Right. And we generally don't have to go to enforcement on people with failing septic systems. That's punishment enough because you've got...
don't misunderstand.
I'm trying to do is describe our relationship.
I'm personally in favor of sewer water.
Yeah.
Okay.
All I'm saying is...
But a number of people, and
sure.
I'm sure a lot of them have talked to you too, in Kegel have expressed to me personally, we're not going to do it.
Yeah, well,
and you know,
I think that's true
say,
in every city.
You know, I don't know what to tell them, so yeah. I don't tell them anything.
That's probably normal.
I think it's true in every city.
I wasn't going to wear my seatbelt either.
Yeah.
Yeah.
97% now do.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
The ding, you know, it dings. It just dings and dings and dings.
Changes.
I live.
Yeah.
Sure.
Sorry.
Arlen. I lived in Eugene for over 50 years.
Yeah.
I lived outside the city. We had a moratorium on septic tanks. Mm-hmm. And any new property that was to be built on was classified inside a special district mm-hmm. at that point. We went through just what you're talking about, and out of about 750 lots, two people said they weren't going to hook up. Well, they're currently hooked up because they ended up with failing systems. DEQ would not, or the county wouldn't issue
right.
a permit because it was illegal.
Right.
And they were 25 to 50 feet from an available system, well within the 300 feet. So, you know, that's going to be taken care of by the city. And if somebody, for example, around here decided, say my neighborhood was outside the city and they formed a special sewer district, we'd be under the same auspices of that.
Yeah.
And eventually, somewhere along the line, property sells. And at the time that it's going to sell,
yeah. Yes.
Make it mandatory to hook up the
yep.
sewer.
Yep.
So what is typical life expectancy of a standard septic system?
It's really going to depend on how well it's maintained, if the tank is pumped as necessary mm-hmm. to prevent solids from going out in the drain field. Mm-hmm. In these rapidly draining soils, it's relatively forgiving because all the contaminants go out into rapidly draining soil and go to the groundwater.
So how long?
I'm wondering how many people.
I mean, some of the systems we have down here are 40, 50 years right. old. Yeah.
But yeah. probably 20 years is what we.
I'm wondering how many people in the Kegel subdivision had their drinking yeah. water tested. When you find out how much is in it, what's in it. Then you might change your mind real quick.
Well, we're fair. Some of them are very conscious of
yeah.
that. Do they
is that from?
This is from Bill.
But so. Where are those? How old are those?
That's just his groundwater assessment of the area.
All time?
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, it's yeah, the reality. You know, the situation we had down in Klamath County where they went down and sprayed for the knapweeds, mm-hmm. they sprayed with picloram, which is water soluble and moves through the soil
like
readily.
Like nitrate.
Yeah, like nitrate. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people just have to recognize it's the fact that their groundwater that they're drinking is at risk of contaminants.
And in that case, we believe that that was applied and the next year was in their well. I mean, it didn't take very long to make
that's
the distance.
That's just right down here, Jack Pine Village.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm, Jack Pine.
Yeah.
It didn't
mm-hmm.
take very long to work from the surface through those.
The soil conditions down there the Kegel soil mm-hmm. conditions are very similar to the soil conditions down there.
Mm-hmm. So
well logs are similar.
So
within less than a year, it contaminated their
it was,
well
water. It was into some of the well water, exactly.
And it was not at a level that was dangerous?
They got letters from the health authority said yeah. that it's not at the level where it's a health concern, but most of those folks didn't really want to
yeah.
drink the water
right.
anyway.
Yeah. So you plant that doubt.
We've been trying mightily, I think, to avoid the situation you described in Eugene where there's some kind of a moratorium. And we're not near that. I don't want to pretend that, you know, we've got you know, that there is a truck bearing down on us on this. But again, we think that we can get in front of this and we're obligated
right.
to do that. So, but we don't want to have to go there ever. You know, I don't think it would happen in, you know, the next
yeah,
10
I
years
hope,
or anything.
I hope the
still.
Folks in Kegel would appreciate the fact that they do have a solution.
Well, and this is a relatively uncomplicated one compared to the rest of the area because there is a city, they are within that city, it has a sewage treatment plant, and nobody appreciates being told they have to spend money. I know
yeah.
that, we all know that, but it is one of those services that cities provide, and then because you're in the city, it's sort of the welfare of all.
Should we, the same, if we move forward on this, should we also, because we have not started to work on moving the affluent field, because if you're going to add 30-35% increase in our, 30% increase in our affluent, is that should this all be part of a, you know, you're trying to figure this whole plan out, you're going to add all of that, because you know, right now we're just spraying water where we do on that big circle you see behind you. So if we're going to head east and go out onto that new land we're acquiring, you know, I thought, well, should that, maybe it's a two-phase, but should be all part of this to, you know, to where that, because you're going from, I don't know, 15-foot, 9, 10-foot soils out to 40, 50-foot soils, where it's all going to be spread. Mm-hmm. Should that be part of all of this?
Well, there has to be, you know, a demonstration that there's capacity to. Are you talking about because of the increase in?
Well, just capacity, but again, I'm trying to think of this, not look at, this is not just adding 10 houses. So for the city, our system is small. So right. When you're adding this big of a number, and we have this other issue where we're right now, right behind you, you can see the big circle, and it's sitting at what depth of soils?
Yeah, 6 or 9, 10 feet.
So, and there's a lot of people. It all goes into this whole South County, you know, because that's where all the city's affluent's going. So do we need to also, I'm not saying in the same bid, but do we, you know, I'm trying to get my arms around all of the various issues here.
Yeah, so I think that the city has to plan for its, if there's growth. I believe that what's already out there has the capacity to deal with what we're talking about. And I don't think you're applying on your land at the maximum rate you could. But.
No, we're taking in, or maybe we're about 50% capacity.
Right. So that's, you know, when I started, I believe, and if I'm wrong, that's fine. We'll fix that. But I believe that there is capacity even in the system as it is, and as the system is designed in the new spot, there is capacity to deal with this. If the city is concerned that, you know, additional growth is going to strain that and you'll ultimately need more capacity, that's a separate issue and that's something you do through facility planning, right? But I think you're in pretty good shape that way. And I'm just going to run through this really quickly because it's an important distinction that people don't always get when we talk about this difference between on-site treatment through a septic system and what the city does. The city holds water during the non-growing season, does not land apply it, and only puts it on the ground when something can grow on it and it takes up a lot of the nutrients and most of the nutrients and things like that. That's a world of difference between having this thing trickling into the ground all year long with snow on top of it, driving it down farther into the groundwater. It is an absolute, you know, huge difference in both protection and appropriate reuse of the water and everything like that. So there's plenty of capacity. It's a much better way of dealing with the wastewater, and it does truly protect groundwater, you know, worlds better than even having great on-site systems.
Is the city, what other areas besides Cagle is the city eventually looking at? I'm thinking of like Glenwood.
No, that when we just say Cagle, so you don't have to hyphenate and go down 3 or 4 different things, because it includes, it's going to, I mean, I think when you do this, you're going to okay. take in the whole.
Okay.
Yeah, Glenwood.
It's all the area between Cagle and the city that's yeah. proposed for development over.
Because once we're running a pipes down the road, then you want to start picking people up.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So, okay.
Yeah, I think we definitely would go down there along Huntington and pick up all those folks. You know, if we were to cross the river, Roslyn Park, because they've got a holding tank, they've done some
right.
So, and then of course it came up, and you could just touch on one of the things we did talk about was maybe picking up the if they do some legislating, but we could pick up that trailer park. It's outside the city, but you know, through an agreement, we could do something. If they're sitting there treating right now, you can see it on the map if someone pointed to that little RV trailer park he's talking about mm-hmm. up here. Is this little thing right? Is little, do you see this density? So if we're already going to be serving these folks, you know, you could pick this up.
You'll go across Huntington.
Yeah, right now the law wouldn't allow us, but through the DEQ and the state,
well,
we could get there.
If that Goal 11 exception were in place, then that would allow it. Mm-hmm. Or there could be a single Goal 11 exception to pick that one
sure
up for cause.
Or public health exception.
Like that. Yeah.
Then the only other area that some people have talked about would be, because if this is Roslyn, so we're bringing sewer here, mm-hmm. this loop, that's another high density. You can see it's developed pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
How many lots do you think are in there?
50,
yeah.
So, you know, and then that maybe is your natural break before you start getting out into any of this stuff. But if mm-hmm. you took on these, you know, that would, again, take take care of a few more folks. But, you know, and of course here, we're going to eventually go out here see to put the fluent. But like I say, right now, Eric, yeah, you guys are right. I think that this will do it. But I just want to make sure right now, no one's working on doing anything with that. But like you also are saying, it still is a lot better because of the weather and how you're doing
it. It's a world better.
You take this, so yeah, you're in here. So these areas here we would take.
Yeah, a little farther south there.
So there's an expansion plan would be is that circles would go out here, yeah, and more of the dune would go in here.
Yeah, well, once we do more of the spine, or we'll just run a pipe down the road, mm-hmm, go into the tracks, but then out here we've got a couple 300 acres we, yeah, can use.
You know. And that actually...
The new event.
Yeah, I mean that's one thing that we're talking tonight at the parks meeting about taking on the event center possibly, but that'd be one parcel, but we'd go out and we may do a UGB expansion the county wants us to out here.
There won't be a decision on that tonight. No, it will be just an informational,
right,
thing.
Yeah, this land right here.
Right.
But that's just for the one. It's not.
How many acres were in that land, Grant?
160. 150, 160.
Well, because they were saying on the television it was 1,000 acres.
Well, but the city got 700 or 800 out,
correct,
there.
Correct.
Oh, so
they're
you got some
total acreage that, yeah, on the, yeah, conveyance.
Oh, okay.
What was that blue pipe they ran past my house going out to the elementary school?
That was water line.
Water?
Water.
Okay.
So is the school on septic?
School's on city sewer.
So how big is the pipe and is there additional capacity there?
That pipe from the school belongs to the school, so.
Well, that's the pipe we'd use, but the, right, what he's saying is the line coming back.
Yeah.
That's in the master plan. Mm-hmm. That has to be upsized.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And then you've got all the Crescent Creek built out too.
Yeah, I mean it's all part of the master plan. The Wickia pump station has to be enlarged. I mean that's all part of all of this. You know, that's why you'll spend a year. I mean, if you move forward, if they actually start going toward, but you know what I think you do is you update the, you can tell me the order, you're going to update the master plan, you're going to come up with some numbers, then we would work with the departments and through the feds and trying to find grants and loans and figure it all out on the financing side, and then of course you move forward to the more detailed engineering and all those kind of things, and then ultimately move to construction. And you know, if we spend a year, you know, if you spend a year kind of doing, you know, moving forward and I think getting the plan updated and trying to find the funding, and then you probably spend about a year engineering it.
Yeah, 9 months to a year.
And then you spend a year building it.
Well, you got to go out for bids. And
yeah,
bids.
So I mean, you know, if the council right now was to say, you know, we're ready to shove off on this, and you know, and then during that whole process, we'd hold meetings out here with folks and start educating. We do a PR campaign and explain it. You're going to get beat up over it. That's just a given.
Yeah.
But we would do all of that. And that's a priority for the council, the goal, the community, and everyone knows, and you move forward with it. As long as it can turn out financially feasible and work. I guess if it doesn't work financially, then at some point, maybe you say,
so I would imagine you'd have us come to get beat up a little bit, too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we'll have a county.
Misery loves company.
Yeah. We don't want to save it for just ourselves.
Yeah, well, I know that.
Especially when we have volunteers.
So do you guys think it's something I guess what I mean is, one thing is, and this is, you're being, they say, people are saying you have to. Because it's important to me that we need ambassadors out there. Because you know, when people start a conversation, we say, well, we have to. See, for me, I won't tell someone. That would be, if I was having a discussion and an angry person, I would say, you know, it's something we're going to need to do, we have to do. But I would also in that throw in why I think we need to. Because what happens is, we all get left, again, standing, there's everyone's around. So it's always nice to know, do you think we need to do this? Is it important to you and your community to do this? Because there is a difference between these guys telling you have to. Yes, that's an element. But do you support doing it? It's something you think it's time to do.
We do.
Yes,
and that's what I
want to protect what we have down here.
It's inevitable, is it not?
Yeah. Well, but I think you need to sell it and give them positive benefits as to why you're selling it, why it should be done, instead of saying, we're just going to shove it down your throat.
Right.
Yeah, that's,
if you can make them buy into it, that's going to be a whole lot more pleasant for them, for the city, for us, for everybody involved. you're going to have the naysayers out there. They're going to say, I don't give a rat's.
But we all moved here for the quality of life. We want to protect that.
But it's a matter of educating the people
right.
in a positive manner to make it work.
Yeah. We're very familiar with this, and
I'm sure you are.
We've gone on 60 public meetings down here over the last 4 years, and we expect that kind of thing. And I appreciate you care whether it's pleasant for us.
Well, I've been in your shoes because I went through meetings in Eugene through all this, and I was adamantly against it until they explained the positive aspects of it. Well, then, you know, you think about it. I'm the one that's going to get it thrown at me today and make a decision tomorrow. I want to digest this a little bit and think about it and then come back and say, yeah, that was a good idea.
Can I make another statement? Mm-hmm. So, with everything that's going to go on down here in the next 20, 25 years regarding groundwater protection and all that, if I had a house in Cable that was on city water and city sewer, and I wanted to sell my house, boy, it's going to be a lot easier to sell my house than somebody out.
Right.
Somewhere else. I mean, people have to really, you know, they got to look forward.
That's one of the selling points.
Got to look forward.
What does other people think? And I mean, the elected officials that are here too, right? Stu, what's your thought? You're here in town here, and you're on, so what do you think?
Well, I think, you know, when the special districts first came out, you know, there was a lot of the same negative. You can't force me to hook up. I won't hook up. And I think everybody's hooked up. And I personally have not heard any complaints from the people that are hooked up. You know, it's the same thing. Once you get used to it, everybody's fine with it.
Yeah.
The same in the industrial park. You know, I think the rates could be a little higher because compared to cities elsewhere, ours is pretty low. I do think DEQ could do a better job of downplaying what's going on in the pond. You guys have the power to say, Bulletin, you got it wrong.
Don't even now, think.
we need the support just like you need our support.
No, but, you know, all I can say is we have done that. We've done everything we could to get the story straight. We cannot tell the Bulletin they can't print whatever they decide right. they're going to print.
That's right. Not good.
And that's just basically
me, Arlo, it could be the La Pine area, mm-hmm. not the city of La Pine.
I just have to say it's the editor at the Bulletin.
Well, that makes all those decisions. Don't ever refer right. to this big area as the La Pine area. We refer to it as okay. South Deschutes County.
Or
Newberry. And so I think that that's something that is, you know, it is just sort of local wisdom or whatever, you know. It's just the way people think of it. Yeah. And that's not something that we can alter. But
Mr. Mayor, you live in the area that's going to have to look on.
Well, there's three or four things here, really, you know. The perception and once we get this thing started and going, which I think is absolutely essential, not just because of Glenwood Acres, but the whole nature of having a city and it being sewer and water, you know, that's going to bring a story probably that La Pine attacks sewer from or the problems, and that'll eventually lead to a point where we're comfortable that we've taken control. I know there might be a couple in our area that doesn't want it. They want the water, but it's all about money with them. It's not about the idea or anything. But on the whole, there's 35 lots there. I own three of them, about 35 acres in there. So. They're all for it, I just think that everything that's been said, but I do think we need to move forward. I
I would encourage you to, you've heard all the conversation around it and everything, give the city staff some direction on taking it to the council, and let's pick that timeline and let's get going. I think when people are more familiar with a timeline and that this is something that's coming, they already know we're a city. They know these things are going to happen, just like Doug has said. And I think putting the information out there that, okay, we're going to move forward, can do more for it. And then, and the city manager's right, you got to go there. We need the ambassadors, and you guys, we live in the areas that'll help. That it's not, it's about quality of life and the water and stuff like that. So I'm saying, let's get going, because we're looking at 5 years.
Mm-hmm. Minimum.
Minimum 5 years.
I don't think you can make it in 5 years.
No, to get it to probably just to get a point. But we know it's a long period of time.
It is.
I think the DQ's already confirmed that, hey, if we get a reasonable timeline, they know this, how long it takes as much as we do. We get a reasonable timeline, we can make it acceptable for those people whose systems fail to not have to put in a system that's going to cost them $18,000-$20,000.
We can have it in under 5 years, you guys.
I mean,
if we decide, we're doing it, we just go do it.
Yeah.
I mean, so it's just a matter of, and I line that's about a year for each of those steps, and if you throw it a year as a buffer, I mean, no, it's. I don't you think? I mean, definitely,
yes.
If you move forward, this is they'll have sewers under 5 years. And then you can work on the, you can give people leeway in their repairs, because mm-hmm. there's a statute to that effect, or not a statute.
Mm-hmm. I get asked all the time.
If you're talking the long period of time, like you said, 20, 25 years or so, like you mentioned, we wouldn't be here. A lot of those people won't be here.
No, that's right.
Property will be sold.
Be resold. And then that's when you put that statute in there that it's mandatory. If you sell the property, it has to hook up to the sewer and water.
The area that I live in, I think, is one of the more stubborn and independent areas of the city.
Your street?
Yeah, that yeah. Mike and his area. But Linda brings up an excellent point. Is we moved here for the quality of life, and it doesn't take much. I'm on the east side of Huntington. Trying to cross Huntington and come into town has become increasingly more difficult mm-hmm. because of the traffic that's out there. Mm-hmm. You cannot live there without noticing that increase, that influx of people. Things are going to deteriorate with more people moving in if we don't do something. So if we want to return to that quality of life, these are the kinds of things that's going to have to take place. I think that it's going to soften that blow, you know, because there's no denying what's going on. And if we don't do something, and relatively soon, then we're going to be behind the ball and trying to catch up instead of ahead of it.
Do you need a recommendation?
You know, I think that if you could want to make a recommendation that we continue to see, move forward on it, mm-hmm. and talk to the council about it, and move forward. Yeah. I mean, if you guys are comfortable. Yeah, we don't. It's not about numbers yet or anything. It's just moving forward. And I think the DEQ guys would be very happy with that.
Do you need a consensus or a motion?
I think the motion would be fine.
Mm-hmm. I'll make that motion.
That.
It's second.
I think it's very, very important that the city begin the planning stages yep. now. And I am all in favor of a motion to start that process and get it to the council so they can begin on it. One of the most important things, and you mentioned it, is how much is it going to cost the property owner to hook up? That's the first yeah. thing that you're going to have to figure out.
Yeah.
Obviously, you cannot figure out at this time frame exactly how much it's going to cost, but you can come pretty close.
Well,
you've done this before,
we haven't
done it a long time. And that information needs to be available So people will know that, hey, in 3 years, I'm going to have to come up with $5,000, $3,000, $28, whatever it happens to be. How am I going to finance it? Where's the money going to come from? What am I going to have to give up? Because the longer the people know what's entailed and what it costs, the better off we're going to be. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they'll have an opportunity to say, well, yeah, we can do that. But that's the first thing that has to be done right off the bat.
That's part of the startup process.
Yeah.
And we have a motion on the floor, so we need to follow up with it.
Yep.
And the motion is?
The motion is to start this process.
To recommend to the city council to start the process,
yes,
of installing water and sewer in Cagle.
Yep. Cagle, Glenwood Acres, and Mike, I mean, I think you're saying that whole area for the motion, Glenwood and other areas.
Cagle around the south.
Well, every area that is not covered.
City area. Yeah, those that are not served in the areas of something. Burgess Road,
yeah.
Cagle.
And so I heard the motion, I think I heard a second.
Yes.
He seconded.
Oh, okay.
Did you own it on your shoulders?
I think let the people that live out there.
You already did.
Let the people that live out there?
I think okay. It's stronger. Let them make motions and second. I mean, it's all those little differences.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. Hey, I second it. But if I die, my blood's on your hands.
Yeah, but you live on a private road. Nobody can bother you.
I don't
know. No, we're not allowed to trespass.
I can't get EMTs out there. So
we're over here. So we had a motion a second, and that's as far as we need to go on that.
Just vote.
I think we've discussed it pretty well.
So all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay.
Well, very good. There you
go. I have to say,
thank you very much.
I grew up in Lakeview, yeah, and to this day, when I'm driving around Bend, you know, you can't go anywhere in Bend and make a maneuver or stop and look at something. It's always somebody either in front of you or behind you.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
yeah,
to this day, I still haven't come to real grips with my feelings about that. Even though I live in Bend.
I told my workers in Eugene when I left, I love Lapine's 5 o'clock traffic. All six cars.
I lived in Multnomah County for 19 years.
I'm so very used to it.
I came here with an attitude, and it just, I'm telling you, I love sitting on my deck and waving at the people I knew while they were going to work, and I wasn't, you know.
Yeah.
But now I don't know most of them, and they're a little aggravating because if I want to go to town, a lot of times I will go right, go out to Burgess, and go out to 97, come into town. Because it is, I mean, when more than six is going this way, and as soon as that light, then the light changes, and you got,
yep,
you know, I mean, the city is getting bigger, or the,
yep,
the surrounding areas.
And the tourists. Sounds, yes. Us, years, yes, ago.
Sounds, yep, like you needed a roundabout.
No, 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 no.
Somebody to say no.
You're
over here.
You're doing great when you said
that. Was that loud enough?
How many blinkers do you have?
Yeah, exactly. I think they took the blinking light out.
Oh, okay. Because I've been there many times.
Okay. Any other issues or concerns? I think we're done with the DQ.
Yeah,
and
yeah, we have a volunteer wants to make up.
But you'll be back.
At whenever you want.
Okay.
Maybe before you want, but certainly if you want us back, we're back.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you,
gentlemen.
Good seeing you.
Have a safe drive back through the city. Watch the speed limit. We tried to adhere to that.
Watch it all.
We have state and county authorities.
Yeah, they're right in front of the office.
Yeah, and they don't care what initials you have on your card. They just rate you up.
This might just be a deal breaker right there.
So we're going
to public comments.
Public comments, okay.
Well, for those of you who don't know me, I'm Mike Carrier. We started several months ago here in Lapine to bring the STEM program, the Science, Technology, Engineering, Mathematics. We formed the Lapine STEM group. It's right now an Oregon nonprofit. We're going forward for our federal IRS 501c3. Of the four or five clubs that we've got planned, two of them are up and running, the Rockets and the Robotics. We, in fact, and I'm going to bring this up to the City Council, just won a Office of Naval Research grant for $2,000 to provide us with 10 underwater sea or underwater robotic kits for the kids, and that's on its way. It's supposed to be delivered Thursday. So Rockets is what I wanted to talk to you about tonight. We're talking about these model rockets. You've seen them in hobby stores everywhere. Now, we were looking for a place to start launching. The high school's going to let us use it for a while. This summer we're going to hold a rocket summer camp. We're over there at Parks and Rec right now with the science program teaching rocketry and robotics. We're going to go in July and August for their summer camp. In the fall, we're going to become a permanent part of that science program. We're looking for a place to launch. Now, initially, I was talking, we were looking at the hayfield. But then when I got to talking to Scott, found out what the hayfield was being used for, we thought, well, maybe not. So what we're trying to do now is find an alternative. And what I'd like to talk to you about, and I'm told I've got to talk to you before I can talk to City Council, so I'm looking for a recommendation when I'm finished here today to the City Council. Let me go talk to them more about it. But some of these areas down in here where we've got industrial zones planned that are not in use right now, as a temporary interim basis, we'd like to take and go out here, and we won't erect any permanent facilities there. What we'll be launching on are, they look like sawhorses, and they bring up the rockets about this far up off the ground. They've got 5-inch circular pads underneath them, metal pads. When the propellant is being burned, you burn 99.8% of the propellant inside the motor. Now, there's some flakes, you'll see them sparkle, they hit the deflector, they glance out, and the 100% is burned before it hits the ground. However, we still keep an ABC fire extinguisher around. You want to take and clear the area right. A little bit. But we're very, very conscious of safety issues. I ran the Reston Rocket Riders back in Virginia for 5 years. That club had 400 people. We were down there launching 2 or 3 times a month. And we were launching out in a steeplechase area, nice green grass and everything. We were out there launching all the time. I had to watch out for a lot of interesting, some of the groundwork. But I was just wondering, you know, would it be possible?
How big of a clear area do you need?
Well, we want to stay low power. So and there's low, medium, and high power.
What's the distance?
550 feet in altitude, maybe as much as 800 feet for some of the... In an area, you're looking at maybe 1,000 feet. And that's just if we've got wind drifting.
What are these things rated for the fire department? Or
they're a Class C. No permit required.
So when the Forest Service says they have a ban on fireworks...
The Oregon law permits model rocketry. Under Part 101 of the FAA and under Oregon law, they're handled in the same section as balloons and experimental aircraft and so forth. But there's no ban on it from the forestry. What we do is go talk to the forest or to the fire district and let them know what days we're launching.
I mean, it's not a big deal to me, I suppose. That size rocket right there, I mean, you can go down to the football field and shoot them off. But
we are.
If you want to go somewhere else.
Yeah.
I mean, is it one of those things where you're just going to go do it? I mean, we're not going to be out there, you know, in the, obviously behind Midstate, that big old field that's developed with roads, gives you a fire break. But if you were to go down at the end of that thing, you know, away from there.
If you get it about in the middle of that, halfway down. They've gone through and they've taken out
Grass.
70% of the trees.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
we're looking to get, you know, here we have the road to contend with, and then the railroad behind it, and that's fine. I mean, that was more than large enough. I think this area right in here would be fine too, and we could park cars because we want to have public launchings. and so that the kids can get their certifications. Two launchings a month is usually what we do. One launching is just for the club, and the kids go out there and they launch their rockets.
Okay, and just then lock off Midway on the other side of Midstate, going south of south of Midstate.
Mm-hmm. Keep going down.
Keep going right there.
Right here.
Well, no, I was
right here.
Right on the road. So you'd be launching right from the road surface. And I don't know if that shows the paved roads there, doesn't it?
That's probably, maybe they weren't in yet. Maybe.
You mean, okay, this is Midstate right here.
Yeah, but if you
keep... see the paved road. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right in there?
Right in there?
Yeah.
Or right here?
Well, I'm saying just right on the road, because the road, Midway, just keeps running south all the way down to there. But if you came back about right there?
Yeah, but we would want to launch on the road itself.
Why not?
Yeah.
Well, then where are you going to park cars and crowd control? You got to get away from the road.
Well, you block it off.
What we need to do is just say if we have an objection to the area, let him decide how he uses them, actually.
Okay. Yeah.
That's probably the best.
Is that one of the rockets right there?
Right.
Okay, what's it made of?
Oh, okay. Now, the rockets can only be made of cardboard, plastic, and balsa wood.
When you fire it off and it goes up in the air, does it burn up?
No.
Or does it fall down?
It parachutes back.
Well, parachutes back.
Yeah.
Oh, I see.
Okay. Now, I had a package. Actually, do you know what happened to the packages that they were supposed to get? It was 12 of them that I submitted.
That's a good question.
Now, in the package, there is a safety code that has to be followed. We are a member of the National Association of Rocketry now. We've got our charter, and here, I just brought it. We just got our insurance, $2 million worth of liability insurance for each member who joins NAR, for the club, and when I go back, if I go back to NAR and amend our charter and give them an actual address, yeah, I got copies for everybody.
Oh, okay.
If I tell them the address that we're going to be actually launching at, the insurance covers that site as well.
What are you teaching the kids? Are you teaching them how to make rocket fuel, or are you teaching
No. Okay, the rockets only use solid propellant. It's commercially manufactured.
Yeah.
You buy the engines. You cannot use liquid fuels in model rockets. They cannot be made. There's only one little metal piece on this rocket. It's a little retainer clip to hold the engine in when it ejects the parachute. It's to keep it Newton's third law. For every action, there's not equal.
Yeah.
It holds the engine in so you don't have engines tumbling down.
Good deal.
You don't let kids out there catching rock. Oh, here they are. Here's the packages.
Mike, let me help answer that question. What they're teaching the kids is how to build them,
mm-hmm.
and there's some dynamics to that. Also, there's a great deal of math involved,
mm-hmm.
As the rocket shoots off and you determine, they can triangulate it and determine the height, and so there's more to it than just pushing the button and the rocket taking off.
There's more to it.
So that's what the kids are getting taught.
Okay.
They get this model rocket, but you know, when I was back east, we had one of the middle schools come to us and say, look, we got dozen young ladies completely failing math and science, and their excuses were girls and math and science is hard for girls, and we don't see the practical application. So their punishment in agreement with the parents was to put them in the rocket club, and in 6 months these girls were passing calculus as 13-year-olds. Because we use Well, the whole purpose of the STEM program is to take the kids, what they're learning in school, you know, I don't know about you, but when I was sitting and looking at algebra, geometry, trigonometry, calculus, I was going, yeah, so what? Where am I going to use it in my real life? Well, that was 50 years ago, and, you know, my last two rockets were Delta Force. So, I've launched everything from little ones using the smallest engines to some pretty heavy hardcore hardware. Now, we're not looking at doing high power here until we can find an area. I think that there should be 5 square miles somewhere in central Oregon that we can get permission to use for high power. The high power altitude record right now is 118,000 feet. But they launch those things down at Bonneville and Black Desert or Black Rock Desert and places like that. We're not looking at doing that kind of thing. Okay. You know,
Christmas Valley is always good for them.
Well, that might be Christmas a place. Now there's only two other clubs in Oregon. One's in Eugene. They've got about 20 people. They're a NAR club. The other one's up towards Portland. They are a NAR and Tripoli. Now, Tripoli Association of Rocketry is about 99% high power. They've got 3 launch sites up there, but they also are a NAR section. They have a youth group in their club. We're looking at getting our kids up and running and get into some competitions with these other clubs and get them out there. Get them to start building some of this stuff and designing it. We have NASA has a software package called Rocket Simulator, RockSim. It's free, they can download it. They can select nose cones, rocket bodies, fins, payloads, type of engine you want to use, and it predicts the performance of the rocket. It gives you, it air checks, gives you the total approximate weight, tells you whether your center pressure, center of gravity are in the correct areas, and then when they go out there to launch it, we have kids out there, they have a little altimeter thing, it looks like, you know, it's like an upside down protractor. It has a little trigger on it and a sighting system. When you pull the trigger and you start following the rocket up, there's a little arm that swings down. And when it hits the apogee of the flight, you let go of the trigger and it locks that swing arm. And you take that degree reading. And you take 2 or 3 of them, you know what, and then it's all geometry then.
Yeah.
And then they start filling it in. And then when you put little altimeters on these rockets, these little, you got all kinds of electronics you can put on these things. And then you have the performance estimator from the software, the field estimate of your altitude, and then you match it against the actual altimeter, and you start judging them on how well they're doing their work. So
I can see this as being an energizing fact of these kids, you know. Some of them can start dreaming about NASA and mm-hmm. Get us out of the Stone Age, as it were.
Yeah. Well, we've got a lot. We've got some contributions from local groups that jump-started us.
Band of Brothers.
A Band of Brothers gave us a jump start.
Yeah.
We have a local donor. Band of Brothers gave us $800. Local donor matched it 1-for-1. We got $1,600 and we bought 4 of the Lego EV3 robotics kits. They're $350. The car club gave us $350. The Dutch Oven Society gave us $500. And, you know, that all got matched. The city approved $1,500 after July to help us with some of the costs of the summer camp. I talked with Parks and Rec, and they collect $110 a week, but we don't get any of that. We just go over there, and we have to provide all of these kits to the kids. This is $10. And I went down to Wilsonville on my own on Sunday and bought 10 of these kits and the launchers and all the stuff to go with them. Now, it's coming out of the STEM group treasury for it. But we've been steadily raising money to take and offset all of this.
Okay, bottom line here.
Bottom line is...
What do you want?
Bottom line is I need this, the Public Works Committee, to recommend to the City Council so that I can go talk to them about using...
What are you going to be talking to them about?
The very same thing I've been talking to you about.
Finding location.
City land, right.
Are you going to ask for money? Or
no. We're not. We just want to use some, you know, a site somewhere here.
You want to find a site.
And he'd come and asked about the sewer lagoon, and we're not real big on that, so that's actually what we thought he was doing today.
Yeah.
As far as the actual other lands, actually technically owned by the county. So we don't own
that. These are owned by the county?
They're owned by the county. Now, the other thing is
city property.
The BLM land out toward the cemetery, we're going to have all those hundreds of acres out there. That may be a long-term place for them with bigger rockets and things. Because that's some of that's then is not too tree. Some of it's open. And there we could just give them permission. I'm trying to avoid getting into, I mean, if we're going to have to, well, sometimes you just go do stuff.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, you just go do stuff. If he wants to keep, because I got to get him off of my agendas. Because he's been
I've been bugging him for a couple of months now.
And we're going to have, we have to move on as a
I know, and we need to, but.
So, you just need to go.
I need to come
rockets off somewhere.
Yeah, and I need to talk to the city council. I'm all about trying to cooperate.
You don't need to come to the city council. I mean, there's nothing for them to approve. They don't own the industrial plant. That's owned by the county.
Yeah.
And so, I think it's been information. You come to the budget committee. We've authorized some money for you. I think that you just need to go find whatever land you're going to do, and whoever owns that land needs to tell you yes or no. We do not own that land.
Okay.
And so, and we do not yet own the BLM land, but once we own the BLM land, if you wanted to shoot them off out that way, we could sure give you authorization. Mm-hmm. The Parks District's going to have land back here on this side of 6th Street. Maybe they would let you do it because, again, nothing's out there. They're not going to use it for anything. Mm-hmm.
There's just a lot of trees out there, right?
Yeah.
Well,
that's part of the problem.
I would just like to make sure that wherever you end up, that you do this along with the City of Lapine Fire and Rescue.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, you have to let them
know. Looked at it. No, they've gone out, they've looked at it, they're aware of the days you're going to be there. They know that at 12 or 8:30 this morning, they're going to run that off because
that is a requirement
we've already
of safety
had
code.
Fire here in town.
That's the safety code requirement that the fire district be, whatever your local fire is, that they have notification. Just like with the FAA, we have to go to the FAA and ask for an altitude waiver. Now, where we are, I expect them to come back and say, you're cleared for any time you want up to 5,000 feet. Beyond 5,000 feet, you're going to have to come in for a special
waiver.
We
have to move on.
So
my
do we need to make you can't give authorization on other property.
No.
I guess not. Look at this as more informational that you're all supportive of. This is a neat program.
It is a neat program.
And, you know, the fact is that today, without some field out, we might come off. But he wants to get it official and formal.
I'd make it say anything right now as my down there at the fire station.
Sure.
Yeah, that's my next stop to talk to them and give them a heads up.
Yeah.
I mean, it's under Oregon law that we can launch these. Father and son, daughters, they go out and launch them all the time in anybody's backyard. But when we're talking about a club launching, having public available launchings, we're talking about having the Civil Air Patrol come down from Bend because they have a rocket requirement in their aerospace. We're talking Sun River has a small informal rocket launching, but they have no club charter.
Did you ever talk to the Model Airplane Club? Because they got an airfield out there.
We're going to be talking to Bernie here as soon as I can catch up with him. Because
they got to pave their runway out 6th Street, and that'd be a good place. And it's wide open too.
Well, we'll talk with him. We have, besides the rockets and robotics, we have an RC club that we want to bring up. It's going to be more than aircraft. It's going to be boats and cars as well.
Yeah.
And then an astronomy club here in the next couple of years. So. There's a lot of stuff going on with this.
Okay.
Well, thank you
very much, Mike. Yeah,
thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mike. Mm-hmm. Other public comments from our... Yes.
Stu Martinez, Lapine resident, also city councilor. And I'd just like to ask your support when it does come before this body about a skate park that's being hung up in some... I don't know what it's going to come up on, but I'm sure it's going to come before this body for approval. But it's been being worked on by the Park and Rec District, and the city is a joint venture. And there's going to be some other hang-ups because some people have become ill. So more of that burden is falling on other people. So I just ask for your support when that does come. We have the support of the city manager, Deborah McMahon, Bob Schultz over at the Park and Rec District, and I need to get this equipment off my property. So I'm hoping that this is resolved soon, because I need the space on my property that this equipment is being stored on, and it's been stored on for about 2 years. So I'm just asking for your support. Thank you. Have a good day.
So any general comments to the committee?
Nope. The only thing I'd say is thank you for today. I think that was a big step actually yep. for us, and we'll kind of move forward. We'll get to the council here in a month, and maybe we'll have to have them back for the council probably a little bit, but we'll do that, and we'll start moving down that road.
There are a couple of points made last month by the mayor. One was moving the 30-mile-an-hour sign down farther north. I'm wondering, seeing how the city is to Burgess, right. to make that whole stretch in.
But in the we town. Just had the speed analysis. The discussion here that day was the sign being moved. The sign, I went and drove it after your meeting. And the sign from Burgess down to the sign is I think 45 or something.
It's 45. So
it's not in order to move the 30 down, that's a whole speed study.
Yes.
And that was just done 2 years ago. And nothing's changed in 2 years they're not gonna come around and redo those. So that's kind of set for a while. I mean unless
I bring it up because being a resident of that area of the 45 from the light, it's 45 till you go past the churches, and then it goes up to 55 and
60
and around the corner. And where you turn there at Mike's, where the road bends, gets to be a little dangerous trying to get out in the traffic sometimes. You can pull out, nobody's coming, you can pull out, and within seconds, you got somebody right on your tail.
That's because they're not doing 45.
Yeah, but it...
Yeah,
but that's a county road, so wouldn't the county have to do that?
Well, it's a state.
ODOT. That's an ODOT. We requested ODOT a number of years ago for ODOT to change the speed limit.
There. And they did.
And they did to a degree, and they're not going to do anymore.
Yeah.
45 and 30 is.
That's where we'll put that flashing light that Rick's going to buy us.
I need a traffic light at my driveway. That's
the alternative. Would you like a light?
How about a new road?
About a roundabout right here in front of my house. The other thing was mentioned was the signage for the city. Instead of saying Lapine 2 miles, because the sign's in Lapine, could you just maybe change it to city center 2 miles?
As it was stated in the minutes, that's probably going to be done when they
right.
do the overpass.
Yeah, it was. My apology. I didn't read that. So
the whole thing will be changed. Would you come out at Burgess? You won't be coming out to Burgess to look at that sign.
Yeah.
Because that sign will be gone. You'll have an overpass. So you'll be moving and turning and going. And so, again, I think all of these decisions, ODOT and especially in particular, they're long-term thinkers in what they don't just
they don't react.
They can't. I mean, it's just actually it costs more, and so that's like say on that speed study, it was raised. The city council raised the speed issue, and ODOT said, okay, we're going to go look at it, and they went and did it, and they spend 6 months at it. So I mean, there's colors and all kinds. They do. They put counters out and do radar guns and do all kinds of things to look at. And they said, this is what we recommend. And in fact, we're going to lower it by 5 miles an hour, lower this by 5, move the sign out. We can't then just a year later be back and say, well, we want it studied again. There hasn't been one new house built. You just can't do that. The state has thousands of intersections and roads. And so
if they put a counter on the road, I think they would see a significant difference from 2 years ago to today.
But see, they're not going to do anything probably for another 10 years.
Yeah.
That's just them.
Yeah.
Well, but again, to go back to I say, it's always nice to blame others. I'll take the no. We shouldn't, Marlo. We have to get here to where we make some decisions once in a while, and then you have to stay. That was done less than 24 months ago.
Right, it was.
And so it you do kind of, in my mind, you have to let them play at least a few years, you know.
Well, why can't we put your little flashy light that you're going to buy for us out there? Have you done that yet, Rick? Maybe we need two.
Okay. Tom, can I just add to, please, I made the comment about moving the sign, the 30-mile sign from in front of the Pet Lapine place, up another 500 feet or halfway between there and Memorial, because people, they see the 30-mile sign up there at the very end of Jim Young's property, and they don't slow down.
No, you're right.
Until they get to the bed, the Lapine Pet.
Yep.
That's why we budgeted $10,000 for a trailer.
Mm-hmm. A radar trailer. I just thought that it would help everybody to move that 30-mile sign away from the Lapine Pets Hospital.
Right.
Up toward Memorial so that they see it sooner. And
well, I think when you come south on that, the first sign you see, it says 30-mile-an-hour speed ahead.
Right.
Yeah. Right. But then you see the 30-mile-an-hour.
Right. So they're not slowing down.
It's really two.
Until they actually see the second one.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They had the same thing out here on 97 when you come into town. 35 miles ahead. Speed limit ahead.
That's true in all cities. Yeah. It's telling you what's ahead. So you
right. Thank you, Tom.
Okay. Any other comments? Do I have a motion to adjourn?
I would make a motion to adjourn.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Good job, guys. Good job.
Aye.
Back, aren't you?